We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. First Friday of the month, we talk about dogs in this hour of Focus. Our guests are dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Listeners, I invite you to join us this morning with questions about dog care, behavior, and training. Join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455-800-222-WILL, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good to see the two of you.
Good to see you as well.
Welcome back.
Happy August.
And we survived the heat, I guess. We're all three here.
Oh, there's
and
no
the
doubt
dogs.
To survive it.
Yep.
Oh, the dogs, they're not happy with me this morning because I turned the air off yesterday.
They have no air?
No air conditioning.
Oh.
I had baleful looks this morning, and I'm like, you know, the humidity's dropping. We need to air the house out a little bit. Yeah. I don't like air conditioning, but I do it for them. So, and now it got really hot out.
And what happens when you try to reason with your dogs?
They listen. I don't know if they agree with me, but they look at me when I'm telling them these things.
Yeah. What do you say we take a call?
Sure.
Okay, this is a listener waiting on line 4 in Indiana. Hi.
A dog, but my question really deals with a cat, and I thought perhaps from your general knowledge of veterinary medicine that you could give me an answer. I have 3 cats and 1 black lab dog. I have a female tabby, traditional coloration and all that, who does nothing but sit at the food saucer and wants me to feed her constantly, and she's getting budgy. And I know that cats can develop diabetes, for example. I don't know what other ailments they can get from being overweight. Perhaps they're similar to humans. But I was wondering, is there something normally going on? This is what happens when a cat reaches a certain age, or what, if anything, at all. And I have a veterinarian, but I have to travel almost 100 miles to get to him. I'm just glad to hear that you were on today and give you the question, see if you can give me some guidance. Thank you.
Ideas?
The only thing I can think is to pick up the dish so the cat doesn't sit by it all day.
That's an excellent idea.
I guess I think that's probably the trigger, don't you?
Yeah. Is the saucer filled with kibble or with canned food?
The caller's.
Oh, he's gone?
He's gone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He hung up to listen. On the radio. So.
I think Jim's got the best solution. Mm-hmm. That's right. It would be a trigger.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is if the cat is getting overweight from being fed too much, then put it on a regular diet and maybe feed it 90% of what you ordinarily would feed it, so it can start to lose the weight gradually. Because, yes, being overweight is as hard on a cat as it is on any other animal. Rogerson? Rogerson always said, who was a John Rogerson, who's from England and a very insightful dog behaviorist, would give advice to people about how to handle their dogs. And he said 100% of the time, if somebody said that their dog was a picky eater, they were always overweight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my dog's a picky eater. And you'd think a picky eater would not eat very much. No. And his advice to these people was always, you're feeding your dog too much. You're letting your dog dictate what it gets rather than being objective about it. Your dog is not a picky eater. It just wants to eat certain things that you will provide it. So give it a normal diet. And I can tell this story. Years and years and years and years ago,
Gosh, that's 40.
I think it was in 1968, mm-hmm. for those of you who remember. We had Brett, and Brett had some sort of enteritis, some sort of intestinal virus. And we were down here. We were undergrads. And he appeared to be dying. We took him to the U of I Veterinary School, which is now the motor pool, I think, out on Pennsylvania Avenue, if it's still there. And they took him for a week, and he got better. The bill, I remember to this day, was $19 for a week of treatment and medication.
Boy, things have changed, haven't they?
Anyway, so he had to get boiled hamburger and rice for dinner until his stomach and everything settled down. So we fed him that for about a week, and then he had to go back on the regular diet. We fed him on the front porch, and we put the regular kibble down, and he looked at Robin, and he looked at the kibble. And he put his nose under the dish and knocked it down the stairs. Boom. And Robin said, okay, and sweeped it up, and he didn't get fat that night. Next night we put it down. He looked at Robin. He looked at the kibble. He put his nose under the dish and knocked it down the stairs. He didn't get fat again. The third night, Robin put the kibble down in front of him, and he looked at her, and he looked at the kibble, and he picked up one kibble. And he chewed it like, and if he could have wrinkled his nose, he would have, and so he went back to eating. But Robin kept saying to him, this is what you're getting. If you don't want to eat it, that's fine. Cats aren't going to starve themselves to death. Dogs aren't going to starve themselves to death. So put them on a regular diet.
And there are kibble products that are meant for cats that
are overweight. Sure. Mm-hmm. And then they have some metered feeders, which is something that... for cats, and probably for dogs, I'm sure, but they'll emit a certain amount of kibble if they've got a schedule,
mm-hmm.
and the kibble is there at a certain appointed time throughout the day, if that would help appease the situation.
Yeah.
Well, I think this cat has learned that when the
mm-hmm.
Man puts down the food, it's in this dish, and the cat gets to eat. And so the dish has become the cat's signal that it's time to eat. And so it sees if he leaves the dish down,
mm-hmm.
the cat keeps thinking, well, it's time to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Where's my food?
Mm-hmm.
So move, get the dish out of there.
Yeah. I had a cat with a similar problem many, many years ago. So you couldn't leave food down for eating whenever she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had another cat. We had another cat for a long, long time, and he was so funny. If his bowl was empty, he had no problem with overeating. But if the bowl was empty, he would lie on the floor on his side and reach out with one paw to the bowl like...
It's his last gesture.
Oh, I'm dying. Please feed me.
Please feed me more food.
And then you'd put the kibble in the bowl and he'd get up and walk away. It was just that he wanted it there, you know.
He wanted to know that
he was,
it was
one
full.
Smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very smart cat. He would also, in the morning, we had this kind of routine where he would sort of guide me through the house to tell me, open this blind. He would reach up and toggle the wand, you know,
yeah.
that you use to open the blinds. Yeah, he'd say, oh, this one, open this.
How entertaining they are,
yeah.
aren't they?
Yeah, so... Yeah.
So I hope that solves his issue with
yeah.
his cat.
And even though it's a long drive to the vet, you certainly could pick up the phone if you were concerned and
yes.
call.
Yes, I would try to find a closer vet, but, you know, to each his own. When you have somebody that you trust and
well,
like, then
yeah.
that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. So this is a Focus, and this morning we're talking about dogs, although we started out here today talking about cats. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us this morning. They're with us on the first Friday of the month. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us once a month to talk about dog care, behavior, and training. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222. Will, the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. In terms of health this summer, have there been any issues for... dogs in terms of anything from fleas to
Oh, I think that we had a pretty active flea season. I don't have any fleas at home, and they're not on any preventive. So, but I've heard a lot of people discuss the fact
that
we've
had a lot of fleas.
Yeah, I just haven't had any, so I'm fortunate. I think probably the biggest thing would be dogs that are overheated. You hear individual stories, and you hear about the dogs left in cars, and that's an ongoing
concern. I think I may have fleas here.
Nice. Ongoing concern, but, you know, call 911 if you see a dog in a car on a hot day, and they will respond.
How do you control fleas? And
okay, so only one of my dogs has ever had fleas, and that would be Andy, and I don't know why that is. Robbie has never had a flea. She had fleas last summer, and I applied Advantage or Frontline, I can't remember which, and that took care of it. But the fleas never Robbie's never had a flea, and we don't have a cat, so I think that might help a little bit, because cats seem to be the biggest carriers, even though they're indoors. But I just don't have an issue with fleas or ticks, knock on wood, but I just don't.
Well, fleas are everywhere. If, unless you put your dog in a bubble, like the Bubble Boy, you're going to run into fleas sooner or later. But it's absolutely true, because we have many dogs. And we had one guy just take a flea comb and brush his legs and get 10 fleas. And we nuked his crate and gave him Frontline. And it took a couple of days, but fleas were gone. Then his, not his friend, Marty, but another male that we have, no fleas at all. And they're in the same house. They're in the same basement.
I don't understand that. It would be nice if somebody could call and explain that, because it's kind of a phenomenon. And people are like the last resort host for a flea. We must really taste awful. But no fleas on Robbie. No fleas this year so far on Andy. And I had her clipped down, her coat shortened quite a bit. And it's easy to comb through. I just gave her a bath last night, and no fleas or anything.
They're starting to find mosquitoes with West Nile, I think. I heard this morning over in Decatur. And that can be a problem. And I don't think it would hurt if you're out, you know, at a picnic or something away from your home, spray some insect repellent on the dog.
I've done that. And it's one that doesn't have that horrible citronella smell to it, because I can't stand that smell, even on myself. And I can't remember who made it, but it's a pleasant odor. It's light. It's not oily. And it works for me for working out in the yard. So I'll give them a little spritz if we're going to be out for any length of time. But that really hasn't occurred much this summer, because the heat has just been too...
It's been awfully dry too much here of in Champaign-Urbana, too.
Too much of a burden for them. They don't like it at all. Yeah. I have to mow and weed and garden. I don't have an option, but I don't attempt to make them go outside when it's just too hot.
Yeah.
They can just go potty and come back in. And this fall, we can go back to our walking regimen. I would be concerned, because we walk pretty far. And to walk, even some nights it was like 88 at 9 o'clock or something, to walk too far, remembering that you have to walk back that same distance. So I don't want to expose them to any possible injury or threat by being overheated.
Well, the next show will be in September.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be cooler then. So we're headed in the right direction. What about fall classes at the Dog Training Club?
Fall classes...
should we look it up?
I've already looked it up.
Oh, great.
Fall classes begin September 18th. But for those that want to get into a class, registration is open, and register early because the classes fill quickly.
And what kind of classes are being offered this fall?
Well, we have puppy kindergarten for our dogs. Is it 8 weeks and older, or full vaccinations and older, which is what a benefit puppy kindergarten is. I mean, the timing's kind of critical, but the dogs that come from go through puppy K and come into the next classes, you can just spot the ones that have been in puppy kindergarten because they just they learn so much. And
let me say something about puppy kindergarten.
Yes.
Two things. One, if you have a puppy, the puppy kindergarten class is fairly flexible, mm-hmm. a lot more flexible than other classes because many people don't, you know, maybe planning to get a puppy or they get it unexpectedly or something in the middle of the class season. If the puppy is 8 weeks old, then fine, bring it in and it'll be very valuable for the puppy even if they only get 4 weeks of the class.
Exactly.
The other thing is don't bring a old puppy to the puppy kindergarten. That we've got a puppy elementary for that.
Mm-hmm.
But people are constantly bringing these old dogs. The training that we give the 8 week and older, 2 month and older puppies is based on their development through those weeks and months, which in the early stages is can be critical. Once a dog a puppy gets to be a certain age, they're not going through the growth that they're going through earlier. They're not going through the behavioral changes that they'll be going through. They're not going through the sexual changes that they're going to be going through. And we've had just a spate of people wanting to bring these older puppies in because it fit their schedule. Well, it might fit the schedule, but it's not good for the puppy because the exercises we do and the things we do are meant for young dogs. Thank you very much.
Puppy Elementary, I believe we're having two sessions this coming fall.
Take them to Puppy Elementary.
Puppy Elementary is great because it's geared toward dogs 4 months of age. And size comes into it, too, sometimes.
Size is a little bit of a consideration.
Yeah, I had a request last week from a couple. They have just the cutest English Mastiff puppy you've ever laid eyes on, and he's going to be 4 months old. And I said, no, he needs to go to Puppy Elementary, and it'll be perfect for him. Puppy Elementary is just like first grade, I guess you could say, second grade. And then they go from there to the home companion classes, which kind of reinforces everything that they've learned in the past and in the past too, because you can go from puppy kindergarten to puppy elementary as well if you wish. It results in well-socialized dogs around people and other dogs in our facility, different noises, and the home companion then kind of builds on that, and from there we go to – we have an organizational chart, which tells you which directions, you know, you can go in. But everybody has to go through Home Companion first and get their Canine Good Citizenship Test award.
What kind of changes do you see in a puppy at 4 months old at the beginning, from the beginning of the class until the end?
Right now, you're in the class with that Sheltie that's made, was it Sheltie Mix? It's made great strides. I was talking to Trish about that one the other night.
Sheltie
the one
Mix.
That was – Jim's in Puppy Elementary currently. He and Robin each have a puppy in that class. But it's a Sheltie that was so shy the first week or two of class and has – shy and she barked a lot, hid under a chair. And now she's come out of that pretty dramatically in a short period of time. That's a good thing. Those are things that if you neglected or you don't see it at home, that becomes more of an mm-hmm. ingrained behavior. And so she's got some self-confidence now. She can play with the other dogs. They do a lot of equipment work. I noticed that Monday night they had weave poles and little bitty teeter-totters. And this is Puppy Elementary, not Puppy K. But just to give the dog self-confidence, some sense of ability to realize the world isn't such a horrible, scary place. And that's, you know, that's worth the price of gold because you can't really duplicate those at home by yourself.
Hmm. What else happens in, so then what happens in Puppy Elementary?
I'll let Jim address it since he's in class right now.
No, we're actually in Puppy K, I think. No, we're in Puppy Elementary.
You're in Puppy Elementary.
I don't know. It's one of them puppy classes. What do you see? Well, a lot of it is fairly repetitious because what do you teach a dog to do? Sit, stay, and down, mm-hmm. and walk without knocking me over. And those are the things we teach in every class. If the main advantage, as Carol has pointed out, to these puppy classes is the class itself. It really wouldn't – if you just sat around and let the puppies play with each other, it would be very valuable. Why? Because the dog gets in a car at home. It drives someplace. It gets out of the car. It walks into a strange building, and there are strange dogs, and it gets to play. It's kind of going to the veterinarian without the needles being stuck in you.
That's a great analogy.
So if and I've told people that have problem dogs in any class, just come to the class and sit outside the ring and work on the exercises at home, but just have your dog here in this milieu of strange odors, barking dogs, confusion. And so if you did nothing else except bring the dog to the class, it'd be great. What the difference is in puppy K, the issues are a lot different. You have a much more submissive animal. They're a lot smaller. They don't remember things quite as well. So from week to week, you tend to do the same things over and over again. And it's a stage in the life where you can give them dominance exercises, and they're fairly effective. When you just a few months later, when you get to puppy E, the dominance exercises don't work that well. That's why it's not a good idea to take a puppy that should be in puppy E and take him to puppy K, because we're doing dominance exercises. They just don't work on the older puppy. What do we teach in puppy E? We teach healing and sitting and downing, and there's
cognizant,
a little equipment work.
Cognizant of the age of the dog, because they're babies. Mm-hmm. They're older babies. So, and then in Home Companion, we build on those skills and move forward and generate interest in the students. And nothing makes me happier than when somebody comes up to me and says their dog can't wait to get there. And one dog I had a couple years ago, it was an Australian Shepherd. It was a great dog. Neither one of the owners felt like going that night. They just didn't. The weather, I remember, was really icky, and they had been working all day, and they didn't want to go. But their dog knew it was Monday night and wouldn't stop pacing until they got the leash and got in the car. And then he was ecstatic. Now, they told me the story. I didn't make it up. But they felt much better, you know, bringing mm-hmm. him, because he clearly enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We had a dog when I was a kid that was terribly got terribly car sick. She loved the vet. She had no problem with the vet.
How do you deal with car sickness?
You know, it seems to it runs in lines that if mom has it or dad has it, the puppies are likely to have it. And we've had quite a bit of it because we travel a lot with the dogs. Ginger snaps.
I'll piggyback on this one when he's finished.
Pepto-Bismol, anything that will settle a stomach, because they're just afraid. The puppies are in a car a few days after they're born. We take them to the vet and get them checked. So they spend a lot of time in the car, and some of them still get nervous. And you may go their whole life and they're like that.
The ginger snap story, Robbie was always violently car sick when he was young. And I went the ginger snap route too. And then I noticed one night I went for the bag of ginger snaps and he just started to drool profusely because he knew the ginger snap meant to the car we go. And he was already to heave just at the thought of the ginger snap. So then what I did, so I realized quickly that wasn't going to be effective. And the ginger is supposed to calm your stomach.
Right.
I couldn't see giving them ginger ale. So I bought.
There's no ginger in ginger ale anymore.
I don't drink ginger ale. Anyway.
Check the ingredients.
I put them on non-drowsy Dramamine. We'd take one about 45 minutes before we were to leave. And he got sick a few more times, but that seemed to help break that cycle. And some dogs will. People, too, they'll get car sick. But it seemed with him that the non-drowsy Dramamine worked well. And he never was sick again. So, But ginger snaps became verboten. I kind of like to have them in the round. They're tasty.
They are tasty.
But we didn't.
Yeah, Robin eats them. She gives one to the dog, and then she eats one herself.
So we had to skip that particular remedy for
relieving. Now, when you take out the Dramamine, you get
he hasn't had it for years. No, Dramamine, I give it to him in a piece of cheese or something, and it just worked enough. And we didn't have long trips, so we went on a long trip to a specialty in Ohio, and I expected him to be ill, and he was, but that was the longest he's been in a car, in a vehicle. And a lot of people think because they can see out that kind of triggers the sickness. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know what the cause is. But anyway, that worked for me.
So if you and Robin have a dog that's particularly prone to car sickness, does that eliminate that dog from you taking that dog to shows and whatnot? Or
Not necessarily, no.
You do the Dramamine too? Or
anything that's effective, we tend to put newspapers in their crate.
Yeah.
Because it's not just drooling. They'll throw up.
If people don't know that. They will throw up.
We give the... It's not necessarily something that goes away with experience. You know, some dogs will do that all their lives. But when you're ready for it, you can give the medications and things like that. It's, you know, they wear off over time. And if you're going on a long trip, then you got to remember to keep giving it to the dog.
No, we should probably put a caveat out there that you might want to check with your vet before you purchase over-the-counter medications for your dog. I knew it would work. But it might not. It might be a little risky for somebody.
How about over-the-counter ginger snaps?
So it might not work as well if you don't know the dosage and so forth. So dogs metabolize.
Make sure your
things.
Ginger snaps have ginger in them. That's all I can say.
Dogs metabolize things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And while Andy doesn't have fleas, she's itchy throughout the summer, and she'll just roll in the grass, which is why we had a bath last night. Or she'll start chewing on herself. If she gets bitten by anything, she has a violent reaction to it. She just digs at that spot. And there's nothing ever there. It could have been a mosquito, could have been something. But I give her in her evening meal, and she weighs between 65 and 70 pounds. She gets 2 Benadryl. Well, even 1 Benadryl will put me out. But they don't faze her in the least. It doesn't make her sleepy. She doesn't appear to suffer any ill effects from it whatsoever, but I think it does help her with these itchy issues she seems to experience. But she'll get those all summer long.
Well, yeah, the size of the dog would make a
big...
But
2 Benadryl for a human being, I mean, you'll sleep for 12 hours straight, which sometimes is a good thing to know if you're really tired. But she gets 2 every night, and it doesn't have the same effect on her, so...
Check with your vet.
Check with your vet.
This is Focus. Our guests this morning are dog trainers Carol Lindholm of and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Sorry, Jim, I didn't mean to leave you out there. And my name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, you are invited to join us this morning with questions, comments about dogs. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And the email address, if you'd like to join us with an email message, will-talk@illinois.edu. We'll have more after a short break.
On the next Fresh Air, Jonathan Eig takes us back to the Roaring Twenties in Chicago, when cops and judges were on the take, bootleggers mowed each other down with Tommy guns, and Al Capone bragged to reporters about his underworld clout. Eig's book, Get Capone, The Secret Plot That Captured America's Most Wanted Gangster, is out in paperback. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Once again, this is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. We're at the midway point here today on the program. And dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Jim and his wife, Robin, raise Malamutes. Carol has a Golden and a Doodle. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. If you'd like to join us, that's 333-WILL. Toll-free, 800 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a call from a listener now in Champaign. Line one, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if a nine-month-old puppy is too young to give a fresh marrow bone to.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a good idea.
What kind of – no, it's not too young, but I was wondering what kind of puppy it is.
Lab.
Okay. You know, they're a nine-month-old Chihuahua puppy might have difficulty with it. But
that paints a picture, doesn't it?
Yeah. That you might not want to give it. But a lab, well, any dog at 9 months has its adult teeth.
Oh.
And you just want to make sure. Now, our experience with marrow bones is.
Do not mention ants. You always
my
bring
aunt,
up. You always bring up that.
Our experience
thing.
is that the dogs don't do any major damage. They don't splinter or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you do want to keep an eye on it just to make sure that doesn't happen. But no, that's our chewy of choice.
I buy the femur bones. And where I purchase mine, they're in three sizes. One, there's shorter, then there's longer, and then there's a big one. So you can choose. For you, I always get the medium size. I don't want that big, giant thing hanging around.
Sure.
It might get ants.
And what I do is I bring mine home and throw them in the freezer. And they get them frozen, which makes everything last a little bit longer. And then I pick them up and put them in the freezer, and they really enjoy that, and I feel much safer giving them something like that that's natural. Even though we'll hear from people that dogs the bones splinter and everything, I don't buy the smoked ones. I just buy the fresh ones and
freeze
them.
Exactly. You can't once they're cooked in any way,
they get
more brittle, and you just can't use them.
I see. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. And we have another caller in Champaign waiting for us. This listener is online, too. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a friend who has a small dog. I believe it's a Pomeranian. It's about 3 or 4 years old, and it's a yapper. And she had a dog behavior expert diagnose the dog, and the answer was, that the dog needed to be walked at least 3 times a day for at least half an hour, and my friend has neither the strength nor the time to do that. What would be your suggestions?
To stop it from yapping?
Yeah.
So that's the primary issue, is the dog barks too much.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when?
And it barks especially, it tends to sit in the window and watch people going down the street.
Oh, mine do that too. Well, only one does, but she barks every morning at the person that delivers the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that doesn't bother me.
Okay.
Okay, and here's why. It's the best security you can have in your home.
Well, that's what I've told her. But
yeah, it doesn't matter if they're little or large, a barking dog, but they have to cease barking when it's no longer, there's no longer a threat.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and Andy stops barking as soon as they leave.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because in her brain, I'm wondering, she's very smart, so maybe she's not doing this, but in her brain she's thinking, good, my barking made this person leave my property and drive away.
Right.
But she doesn't necessarily equate it with the newspaper being delivered.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mind that barking because better than putting a... You know, having to pay for your house to be secured and wired, and that's just my
thought.
Well,
that's not everyone can.
So the message to my friend is put up with it.
Well,
no.
Yeah, that's what Carol's saying.
No, she doesn't do it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't do it every time anybody walks by. She knows who lives.
Well, that's essentially what this dog does.
Yeah.
Is every time somebody goes by.
The first thing the dog, we call it a trigger or a cue or stimulus. And for the dog, at least in terms of the window, the stimulus is people walking by.
Right.
And as Carol has observed, the dog, she thinks her job is to keep strangers away, okay? This is not a show of dominance. Actually, the more submissive dogs, that's their job. It's not the head dog's job to keep, or head wolf's job to keep strangers away. It's the lower echelon dogs. So she's doing her job, barking at people, and by golly, as Carol has observed, they go away, which just reinforces her barking. Now, you know, there are various training techniques you can use, but as long as she goes to the window and barks at cars that are driving by, and as long as they keep driving by and go away, she's going to think it was because of her.
No, it's people walking
or people walking by. Sure, sure.
It's a fairly well-populated neighborhood, and quite a few people do go by.
Yeah, but well, she's a busy little dog, then, isn't she?
So she's up there, and you know, it's self-rewarding, and it's her job, and she has fun doing it. So, how do you keep her from barking at people? Don't let her see the people.
Okay. So pull down the blind?
If she has blinds, I was thinking of putting some, and I'm thinking of a Pomeranian, and I'm thinking of like a front window that has a small sill on it, which would be too small for a bigger dog, but for a Pom, it's probably just the right size. Putting something there so that the dog can't get up and look out the window.
Okay.
That'll solve the problem of her barking at things, at people that are walking by, but it's not necessarily going to stop her barking. So you might want to, or she, your friend, might want to get one of these toys.
The Busy Buddy, my favorite interactive toy ever. Premier makes them. And they come in sizes that are Pomeranian sized and larger. And it's a dispenser, two discs that you... You put some kibble in the bottom of the other, screw it closed. You can increase or decrease the amount of difficulty for the kibble to roll out. But the dog rolls these. It's like a flat disc, but rolls it with their nose, and kibble will fall out. And that keeps them occupied. But you have to remember what goes in that.
I don't know about that, and I don't think my friend does. And those would be available, what, at a pet store?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Pet Supplies Plus has them.
What kind of toys?
It's by, the company name is Premier.
Premier.
And this is the Busy Buddy.
Busy Buddy, okay.
Busy Buddy. And they have a lot of interactive, good interactive toys.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I will pass on that word. I'm sure she'll be grateful.
Yeah, and that should at least be some of the exercise this other person suggested the dog should get.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener in Park Forest, Line 4. Hi.
Ah, hello. You know, first of all, I love your show. I love listening to you guys every month. It's endlessly fascinating to me. So thank you very much for entertaining me.
Thanks, Dad.
I had a question. I love dogs, but I haven't had a dog for, pardon me, quite a while. And I'm interested from listening to your show how dogs think and what their memory is like. Because, for instance, I know, you know, you've said before, okay, well, if the dog, you know, poops in the house, take the dog to the poop, the dog doesn't realize, oh, that was me who just did that a couple minutes ago. But when it comes to things like, for instance, you know, teaching a dog not to pull on a leash all the time when you're taking it out for a walk, and how you can train it to do that. Well, the dog does seem to understand, oh, you know, pulling on the leash never works, that sort of thing. So I guess it's a stupid question, I know, but I'm just not sure how, like, dogs think or what kind of things they retain in their memory.
The dogs have quite a bit of intelligence. It's just how do they organize the information that they've gotten. Now, there was a Nova on, I think over the weekend or recently, it was a rerun, but it had animals that are, you know, are fascinating thinkers. And there's that border collie in Germany.
Gosh,
it knows if 100 or 200, I should say 200 or more names for various toys. So if you say, get the Binky, it'll go get the Binky. If you say, get the horse, it'll go get the horse toy.
And never seems to fail. Of course, no. We see the edited version, but well, I have no reason to think he would fail.
Yeah, and there are controls on it, like it's in another room, so you can't be pointing at it and all that sort of thing. Now, that's fascinating, and the dog has associated beyond what we would have thought a dog could do, words, which are fairly abstract or just sounds, with objects. Still, you can't say, go get the binky, put it over here, go get the horse, put it over there, and put the binky on top of the horse. You know, the dog, that's not how the dog sees the world. And it doesn't understand language that way. In other words, you give it a cue, binky, and it goes and gets, it can recognize a particular thing. And then they had the parrot that could talk.
The African gray?
Yeah.
Yes. Alex was
Alex
his name.
Was, yeah.
I couldn't read that book.
He died. But in any event, it's not that what the animal thinks about, it's how they organize the information. If there's a hole in the fence and the dog gets out, you can put anything you want there, a concrete bunker. But I guarantee every time you let the dog out, he's going to run to that spot on the fence to see if the hole is there. Now, does that mean he doesn't remember that there's no hole there? No. You know, just yesterday he went there and there was a concrete bunker. It's just that information is still relevant to him because it's how do you get out of here? How do you get through the fence? And there's no – apparently not seeing the hole doesn't get rid of that behavior. In terms of pulling, when you try to walk with the dog, that is a kind of a behavioral thing. And behaviorists would love that. Okay, I stand here, you pull, you don't go anywhere. But first, the dog has to want to walk somewhere. If you get a dog that doesn't care, and they might just lie down. Oh, if I pull, I don't go anywhere, I think I'll just lie down. So you have to have a dog that's motivated to move, and then you're stopping it. So the reward is if he stops pulling, he gets to move. But for a lot of dogs, that's not a reward. I had a person in a class I'm teaching with a Doberman, and this Doberman didn't care about food at all. I mean, we took everything we could think of. We took one of my fingers off and gave it to the dog. Just there was nothing that was going to motivate this dog that had anything to do
with his head.
Yeah, it was. And I said to her, "Try toys. Try something else. Because unless the dog wants something, it's very difficult to train them." But your question is, how do dogs think? How do they learn? We don't know. What we do know is they do not understand language, despite what Carol may tell you, at all. They will understand sounds and associate them with certain things. They'll understand sounds and associate them with certain behaviors. But anything more complex than that, they're pretty much lost. Now, it's still fun for me, and I do it all the time. I talk to the dogs all the time.
I do, too.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I know, well, they don't understand. And since they never say they don't understand, I can assume that they do and keep going. But there have been a lot of studies on dogs and dog behavior and things like that.
See, you know, I'll leave in the morning, and I'll say, I'm off to work. I'll be home in a little bit. Like, that doesn't mean anything. But if I don't say that or use the word work in my goodbyes, they think they're going with me. But I just say I'm off to work.
How do you know what they think?
They just stand there and wag their tails and go off to find a place to sleep for the rest of the day. If I don't say anything, then they think, we get to go with because she didn't say that word work. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me projecting onto them, but I get a different response.
It's one of my favorite stories. A Chinese philosopher named Zhuangzi was walking with his philosophical rival, and this is just a story, whose name escapes me. And Zhuangzi looks at a pond, and he sees fish, and he says, "Look at the fish. See how happy they are to be fish swimming around a pond." And his intellectual rival said, "Since you're not a fish, you can't possibly know what makes fish happy." And Zhuangzi said, "Since you're not me, you can't possibly know whether I know what makes fish happy."
I love that.
Yeah. Same with dogs. We don't know what they're thinking. And I might be wrong. And Carol's dissertation to the dogs.
I think it's just your relationship with them. there's something that happened this week that just I was just struck anew by how incredibly intuitive they are. So I go to bed between 10 and 10:30. Seven nights a week. So I was up watching something, and it was like 10 to 11, and Andy got up and looked at me oddly. I said, "Do you have to go out?" They just stood there. I said, "Do you want to go to bed? Because we all go together." And she turned and trotted and went back to the bedroom. Because it was like, okay, you know, you blew past the time frame that you usually do. Now you're sitting here watching MSNBC again, so let's go. And but that's what she was trying to tell me. She wanted to go to bed. She didn't want me to stay up anymore. You can watch it in bed, fine. Well, but I thought they know your habits and patterns, so
they are keen observers of physical standing, your stances, your expressions. Which is why they know you're going to get out of a chair before you do. And one of my favorite kid stories is a little girl was six. A friend of ours said to her mother, "Why do old people always grunt when they get out of a chair?" And you know what? I never noticed it, but I do. But the dog, and like our dogs in the basement where we feed them, we can go up and down the stairs 100 times, but the time we go down to feed them is a function of many things, and when they all come together, the dogs start barking. They know we're going to feed them at that moment. So they are observing our behavior. If Jim comes down alone, we're not going to be fed. If Robin comes down and Jim comes down 2 minutes later, that's when we get fed, and that gets them all excited. So they know they're watching us. That's why we can train them using hand signals, because they're watching us all the time. But they're also watching us to see what are we going to do next. And so we think, oh, the dog is really psychic. They knew I was going to get out of the chair. Well, yeah, because you moved your foot the way you always
exactly. Mine lay right underneath the kitchen stool at the counter. And I don't know exactly what it is, but they know when I'm going to go up and get another cup of coffee, when I'm going to go get ready for work. But they're up on their feet before I even get off the chair.
Humans can do that too. It's just that why bother when we have this tool language that we spent years and years learning. And that is a much better substitute from actually paying attention to anything. Are we answering your question? I don't know.
No, could you start from the beginning?
Yeah. Well, once there was a wolf.
We've got another caller, and we've got an email question.
Thank you very much.
So thank you for the call, and thank you for the compliment. That's good to know.
It's worth every penny we earn, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
I want my salary raised.
Okay, and we have an email message. I'll just mention this quickly. A comment on this listener's experience with giving a black lab marrow bones. We had been giving our dog marrow bones for a couple of years. Then one day he cracked a back molar on one. His face swelled up, and it must have been very painful, not to mention the $300+ it cost us at the vet.
Oh, it wouldn't cost that today. It'd be much more.
So. No, but no, and that's with anything that caveat needs to go along with it, just because I've been doing it for years and Jim and Robin have been doing it for years, that doesn't mean something won't happen one day.
People give their dogs tennis balls all the time. We had a dog eat one, and it cost a lot more than $300 to go in and get that thing. So, yeah, it's dogs don't always cooperate with what we think they should be doing.
So let's take a call now. This is a listener in Robinson on line one. Hi.
Celeste, I've got an anecdote that corresponds with many of the things that have been said about Pomeranians and the ability to learn words. I had a black Pomeranian living in California, and when we were preparing dinner for guests, the dog would hang around underfoot hoping to snap up something that had been dropped. So to avoid that, we told the dog, "We're going to have company. Go look out the window and wait for the company." The dog would obey. He'd crawl up on the back of a wing chair, look out the window. And when company did arrive, down a long hillside approach that we could not see them, but the dog could, he would yip once, dash to the front door to greet them and be petted and made over. And this happened over and over again, and until one night after dinner, and the guests were seated in the living room, one of the guests asked me who I worked for, and I said American Can Company. And upon hearing the word company, the dog leaped up to the wing chair, even though it was occupied by a guest, to peek out the door.
He
knew the word company, at least, and he looked forward to company because it was so much fun for him.
That's a great story.
Thank you.
I love
that. Thanks for the call this morning. Yeah, that's a great story. Well, my mother would send the dog in the morning to wake each one of us children up individually, and the dog always got it right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, and she wouldn't leave you alone till you were.
Yeah, up. And it just mystifies me why just some people can't revel in those little joyous things. You know,
They
never give their dog a chance to develop fully.
Yeah,
I think, but.
Well, it's a great relationship.
It is.
That bond is so terrific.
I have a similar story, if I can tell it real quick.
Yeah? You got a minute.
He's never said anything in a minute.
At the show this weekend, a little six-year-old granddaughter of a friend of ours was showing a veteran dog. And she was six. It was her first time in the ring showing. She was the only dog for that class. And she was running toward the judge with her dog to show off its movement. And it looked like she was going to run into the judge, so he put his hand out like a traffic cop to have her stop. She looked up, saw his hand at her, and went over and gave him a high five.
He told that story the night. It was hilarious.
Oh, just everybody watching just laughed. But a human will react the same way also. That was what she had learned, so even though it was out of context.
That would have been
wonderful. Did the judge enjoy that?
Oh, he laughed.
Yeah.
In fact, he gave her a real high five. She won the class because she was the only one in it. And so when he's giving her the ribbon, he gave her a high five.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's high five our way out of here today.
No, yes, we'll see you in September.
In September.
You're cute.
See you in September.
Okay. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm, they're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they'll be with us next month on the first Friday of the month, the first Friday in September.